The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now we're going to be chatting to Pete Benson now about his book called Tales of a Film Prop Man, Take Two. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Oh, thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. So the fact that it's called Take Two, is there a Take One then?
There is, in fact, a Take One, yeah. it basically leads on the second one, links to the first one. It pretty much, it's sort of my film career worked in about two different sort of sections, really. So the first one was about feature films, and the second one I moved into doing commercials and starting my own prop hire company. That's just why there's two books.
I've got you. So when did you become a film prop man, and why?
A long, long time ago, I'm afraid. 1978 is when I actually started.
Right.
It was a bit of a... Well, it wasn't something I planned to do. I was going down the education route and going into an office and that, and I just sat in an office one day, the sun was shining, and I thought, I can't do this for another 50 years. So I decided to do something different. My brother was a prop man back in the 60s, and he suggested me, why don't you do that? And I thought, well, why not? So I thought I'd do it for a couple of years and make some money, and then 30 years later, I was still doing it.
Wow, it sounds like great fun.
Yeah, it was good.
I've got a couple of little anecdotes here, and I'm not sure whether that it does say it's from your second book, so I'm not sure if these are from the commercials or the films, but a couple of highlights are one from Michael Owen scoring goals.
That is in the second book, yeah. It was probably many of you have seen Gary Lineker doing Walker's Crisps adverts.
Yes, of course.
I did a load of those. When I switched from feature film to doing commercials, I did a lot of those in the beginning. And he used to have like a guest on in most of the ones. And in this particular one, Michael Owen was that guest. And it was all about Walker's Crisps. And I don't know how long you got for the story. But
oh, we've got plenty of time. You tell us the story.
Basically, we went up to Birmingham in the Midlands. And the idea was this packet of crisps would majestically float down through the air and land at Michael Owen's feet. He would think, this is my lucky day, pick it up, eat a crisp, and walk off down the road, which seems fairly straightforward until you find that particular day it was overcast, the wind was blowing, and when you throw a packet of crisps into a gale force wind, it tends to not land where you want it to be. So it was a question of trying to get this right, and I had to weight the packet. I was to make sure that the crisps were all pristine. They couldn't be just broken ones. They had to be proper rounded ones, the right colour, not too burnt, all those sorts of things. And from a position that was about 15 foot above the pavement on a scaffold board. So literally I had to try and find where he was going to be at a certain time, try and guess where this packet would land at his feet. Well, as you can imagine, it was impossible.
It sounds like you could be working a lot of hours to get just the right shot.
Well, it's a sort of prop. It's what a prop man does in many cases. He gets these impossible tasks a lot of the time to do. And I don't know, I just looked down at him one day and I said, look, I'm sorry, this is really hard. And he looked up and said, look, I said, don't worry, we'll get this. And I just thought, as I said in the book, basically, that as a film, you know, as a striker for England, he probably gets one or two chances and he has to make that chance work. And I thought, that's probably like this one, really. And out of the blue, the wind stopped. I let the packet go and it landed perfectly where it needed to go. He picked it up, took the crisp, walked off down the road, and there was a sort of silence for a while, and everyone just cheered and clapped that we got it. We've been doing it for about an hour and a half.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
They're the stupid things you do as a prop man on commercials.
And is he nice? Was he nice, Michael Owen?
Absolutely nice, yeah. I mean, Gary Lineker was nice to work with. You know, I know he's had some bad press in recent times, but he was a nice fella. You know, I got on real weirdly, man. He was very easy. He had a great sense of humour, and it was nice working with him. And the company I worked for was really nice. So,
can it be dangerous? I mean, you mentioned with that one with Michael Owen, you had to climb up on the scaffolding. Can it be quite a dangerous job?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think back in the sort of 80s, the sort of safety aspect of doing anything wasn't quite so strict as it is these days. And in films and commercials and whatever you're doing, there's always stupid things you're trying to do. And often it occurs on the spot without having too much preparation to do much about it. So you either do it or you don't do it. So you sort of take your chances in some ways. This wasn't too bad. I mean, there's no way that they could have put any stump mattresses or boxes underneath me, because underneath me was where Michael Owen was going to be walking with a packet of crisps. So, you know, I fell off and be on the pavement.
I will never look at that advert the same again now. I mean. So are you your own boss? I mean, do they say to you, right, this is what we want to do. We want Michael Owen to walk underneath and the crisp packet to land, and then you have to decide how to do it.
Yeah, pretty much so. I mean, I don't, those days, if you are a freelance operative, you know, you work for all sorts of people. You don't work for any one particular person. So, you know, I had an agency then which used to get me the work, and I used to work for similar companies a lot of time, but you could work, like with a film, you might do 3 or 4 films a year possibly, but with a commercial, you could do 100, 150. They just were 2 or 3 and sometimes a bit longer, but mostly a very short period of time. So, yeah, you just, they used to just, yeah, by the time you found out what they were supposed to be doing, you had to be doing it, you know what I mean? It wasn't a lot. So one good thing about being a prop man is you have to sort of think on your feet a little bit, I think. Otherwise, you could get yourself in a right mess.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you also worked with Larry Hagman, good old J.R. Ewing.
That was the British Gas commercial. I don't know if anyone remembers that back in the day, quite a long time ago. Yeah, we had to, that was a funny situation, really, because I worked for a company and they just said, we've possibly got a job coming up which we're going to have to go to the States to shoot with Larry Hagman, but it's all hush hush and stuff and we don't know if it's going to happen. Can you go at a minute's notice if possible? And I thought, well, yeah, I might do that. So one day they just phone rang and they said, look, we're going, you need to pack a bag, but we're trying to pretend we're not actually a film unit because we don't have the proper paperwork and anything. So we had to pretend. So I took a few bags with me because you can't take too much of going abroad because it costs too much to transport it. So I took one bag and I just filled it up with sort of dusters and sprays and polishes and anything like that, and just put a few socks and pants on the top. Of course, on that particular day, they said, because there's such a large group of you, they're only going to pick out 1 or 2 people to do a security check. So they picked me, if obviously they were going to pick me. So I said, do you want me to take all my bags? And the fella said, no, don't worry. Just take one bag. He says, that'll be fine. So I took this bag, which had all the dusters and sprays and just a few pants and socks on the top. And I sat, stood in a queue for the best part of an hour, thinking I'm never going to get on this plane. So when I got there, the lady didn't look very happy. And she said, can you open your bag? And I opened it and she took the socks and pants off and there's all these sprays and cans underneath it. She said, you're travelling very light, Mr. Benson. I said, where's the rest of your clothes? I said, well, they're in the other bags. So she said, what other bags? I said, the ones on the plane. She said, well, why have you only got this bag? I said, because your security fella told me. So I just basically stood there for an hour for a waste of time. She said, well, this is great security, isn't it? Oh. You could have had any of the other bags. And so it wouldn't happen now, but back no. then it happens to be serious. So we had to get on a plane, flew out to the States, to Los Angeles, and we had to sort of work around Larry Hagman's timetable. So we had to rush to a location he could be there and stuff like that. He was a lovely fellow as well, very nice.
Oh, that's very nice to know.
And then at the end, they treated us all to a treat and they took us out to a big club, which was a drag club in one of those yellow school buses you see on so many USA films.
Yeah.
That was a night and a half. I mean, I don't think many of the people remembered the after something like that, seriously. And in England, the person at the airport, we were supposed to go back the following day, and with about 40 minutes to go, we didn't have a director with him. He disappeared somewhere for the night. So. I'm going further with that story.
but the actual commercial went well, did it? The filming of the commercial?
Yeah, no, you can go online and punch in Larry Hagman British Gas commercial and you'll see it.
But you had to go to America to do it.
Yeah, it had to be because he couldn't come here. We had to go to him.
So. Brilliant, brilliant. And do you reveal in the book any trade secrets? I mean, for example, you see these beer adverts and I often wonder how they look so fresh because they're obviously under studio lights.
Well, that's the problem with beer, really. You know, when I first started, I really did not want to do beer commercials because they really are quite hard, because of just what you just said. When you put a beer in front of a camera, which has got hot lights all around it, the head on it just disappears. It makes it look dreadful. So it was a question of, at that point in time, just keep putting in a new pint and a new pint and a new pint. And then depending on the type of beer you're doing, if you're doing a lager or a beer or a bitter or something, they're different colours. A lager would have the outside of the glass like with a spritz on it to show it's cold, whereas a bitter may not have that. And it was just a nightmare. And then a mate of mine, Adrian, Gendros, I'll put his name in there. He actually lives out in Spain. He came up with some great inventions. Became the king of beer, basically, himself. So I learned a lot of him. And he found this heading, basically, which just mixed it up with a bit of the beer and put it on the top of the beer, and it just sat there. And if it started to go down, just whisk it with a little end of a knife or something like that, and it would stay there again. And then he found this black molasses, which you could water down. You could make it a light lager or a dark bitter or a stout or whatever you like with this thing. So those two little inventions he came up with were brilliant, and I didn't mind doing beer commercials after that for so long.
Tricks of the trade. So do you still have your prop hire company, or have you finished now?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, as I said, the first one, Tales of a Peel and Prop Man by Pete Benson, that dealt with the future side of stuff. And then it was one night on a film called Brazil. I don't know if you've heard of that film.
I don't think I have.
Directed it, and he had Jonathan Pryce was a lead man in it, and so many other British actors. It was a brilliant, lovely film to work on. But we were coming home one night, and it was pouring with rain. It was a really long day. We were tired, and Dennis, my standby prop with us, he said, "God, I'm so tired." He said, "I'm fed up with doing this." And I said, "Well, can't we think of something else?" We did. And that was where the idea came in. And we thought we'd get a couple of other fellas with us. And eventually four of us started the prop hire company. And because we started with 2,000 square feet, which when you're trying to fill that, it's quite a lot. And then we decided that it was going to cost a load of money, which we didn't have. So we had to keep working, which was counterproductive to trying to get this company up and running. So in the end, I thought, well, I need to find something that's going to give me the same money so I can still exist, because I had a young family, you know, and I was married. We had a mortgage like everybody else. So commercials was the answer to that. It was a smaller time, same amount of money, and then it gave me a bit more time to go into a company called All Props, which should be started. And it went on from there, really.
Well, we've had the films. We've got Tales of a Film Prop Man take two. So will there be a take three? Will you be carrying on?
the two books really tell the story of my 30 years and how it progressed from when I first started to when eventually I sold the prop house. It was a much, much bigger hire company than us. It were run by a venture capitalist who gave the lady in charge any amount of money she wanted to go and buy up. They wanted to be the biggest prop hire company in Europe. So they went round and knocked on doors at people they wanted to buy out, and we were one of them. So they made us an offer we couldn't refuse, is the truth of it. So in 2007, we sold it. Just about got the money, and 6 months after we got the third amount of money that came in for it, it's when the economy hit the skids in this country.
I remember.
And bankrupt, and we got the money and they went bankrupt. We were so lucky.
Wow, yes.
Finished the side of it. So, I mean, but when we moved on from there, there's plenty of things that I didn't put in both the books, which I could easily do something like an outtake. But, you know, publishing your own book on your own is an expensive business. So, and the idea for me was really, I mean, I love to sell books and I like to know the people who buy it, because it's, to me, it's really satisfying to see that going on. But it's a load of money. And if you're not backed by a big publisher, or you're not already a celebrity that goes on the telly or the radio and everyone buys 6,000 books just because of that. It's hard going.
Yes, of course it is. Well, I wish you lots of luck with this one. We're actually selling it right now on our website. So if anyone wants to buy it, they can go to tre.radio and click on the bookshop banner. It's called Tales of a Film Prop Man, Take Two, and it's by Pete Benson, who we're chatting to now. Is there anything where people can find out more about your other book or about you? Are you on social media at all?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Instagram and I'm on Facebook. I've got a website, which is peter-benson.com, which is all lowercase. If you go on there, you can see more about me and more about my books. And if you just go onto Amazon and type Pete Benson in, not Peter, Pete being an optative one, both my books will come up anyway. And it's got a load of blurb. It tells you about the author and what I've done and stuff like that. So, yeah, there's plenty of ways you can get hold of me.
Great stuff. Well, I thank you for your time and I wish you luck with your second book. Thanks, Pete.
Thanks. Nice to talk to you.
You too. Bye-bye.